ॐ पर्थाय प्रतिपूजितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन प्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्तधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी. अतकेन प्रयुक्तोऽयम् पापं चरति पुरुषः अनिच्छन्नपि वर्ष्णेय बलादेव नियोजितः अथ केन प्रयुक्तः अयम् पापं चरति पुरुषः अनिच्छन् अपि वर्ष्णेय बलात् इव नियोजितः.
How come you don't go like Arjuna, Uvacha? Remember how Swamiji used to do that?
I didn't notice it.
Yeah. I just love that so much.
Yeah. Arjuna, Uvacha. Arjuna, Uvacha. Etakena Prayuktoyam. Etakena Prayuktoyam. Papam Charati Purushaha. पापं चरति पुरुषः अनिच्छन्नपि वर्ष्णेय बलादेव नियोजितः
Don't you remember he would just blast out Krishna Uvacha?
I do remember. So Arjuna Uvacha, Arjuna said, okay. Now, Krishna has been talking about raga dvesha and how raga dvesha are your likes and dislikes, right? So in the previous two verses, he was talking about the raga dvesha as really being the enemies of the person. Because the raga dveshas are what really pull your mind away. They're your kama, your desires. That's what he's moving into. So in this verse, he says, in this verse 34, just to go back just a little bit, he says, raga dvesha, likes and dislikes are really there, going to be there almost as a law in reference to any given object. You like it, if you think it'll make you happy, you'll have a raga for it. If you think it will cause pain, you have a dvesha. So raga dvesha are really kind of the gasoline. Sometimes Swamiji talks of it like that, the gasoline that keeps a person going, these raga dveshas. I go after my likes and away from my dislikes. And the problem is that these raga dveshas that are really can be in reference to any object in the universe, right? Any given sense object in the universe. They're possible for them to be there. The thing is that these raga dveshas have to be under your control. If they're not under your control, they become your enemy. Right? What he means like that is if you have a like for something and you can't say no, then that raga dvesha owns you. Right? It is dragging you. If you have a dislike for something and you can't control your behavior around that object, then it owns you. It's in control. It's taken you over. Okay? And so when that's the case, it becomes your enemy. And so he had that verse. And then from that verse, he went on to, Krishna went on to speaking about, it's far superior for a person to do what is their own dharma as opposed to doing somebody else's dharma. Even if you do your own dharma imperfectly, he says, swadharma vigunaha, even if you do your own dharma imperfectly, that's far, far superior to doing somebody else's dharma well. In fact, he says, now remember he's talking to Arjuna, he says, in fact, it's much better to die doing your own dharma. Because if you're doing somebody else's dharma, you're going to be fraught, that life will be fraught with fear. And so he's kind of juxtaposing these two things, you know, doing your own dharma is better than doing another's dharma, and having control of your likes and dislikes is absolutely necessary, otherwise they become inimical to you. And so actually the two, so now I'm just going to move on with this next verse, but these two, it's also interesting to see, this, the to put these two together so that you understand. Think of it like this. From a Vedantic perspective, you've taken this particular birth based upon prior karmas. So your parentage, your the place that you were born, the opportunities that unfold for you as you move through your life, the people that you meet, the jobs that you have, the major responsibilities, those are your prarabdha karma. And that prarabdha karma, the karmas that have brought you here and continue to unfold for you, so that actually one way of looking at it is that your life unfolds for you and here you are in the middle of it. You're in the middle continually of the life that's been unfolding around you. And in this life, which is your life that is unfolding around you, there are duties to be done, your duties. That's your swadharma. The things that are called upon you to do. That's your swadharma. Everybody else will have their own swadharma. You have yours, and yours isn't theirs. And so the most important thing for you as a human being is to do that swadharma properly. So I often tell the story of what Swamiji said once about his own life. He said, and it's directly related to this verse, he said, I do what is in front of me to the best of my ability, day by day, moment by moment. What is there to be done, you know, that is in front of me, that I do to the best of my ability. That's the swadharma. You know? Now, with raga dvesha, right, the raga dvesha can get in the way of your swadharma. If it gets in the way or obstructs your swadharma, it becomes a problem if you can't say no. So let's put it more in just in English. If I have certain responsibilities or duties or things that need to be done by me at a given time, they're my duties, they're my responsibilities, and my likes and dislikes don't go along with those responsibilities, if they conflict with those responsibilities, and I'm not able to say no to the like and dislike, then I'm pulled away from my responsibilities. And that is a problem. That's where I can get into trouble. I have to be able to say to the raga dveshas, it's not about the raga, the likes and dislikes not being there. It's not about that, because they will be there. As long as they're sense objects and sense organs and you have preferences, in any, you will have preferences, prefer this over that. So those raga dveshas will be there. But do the raga dveshas pull you away from your dharma, what is meant to be done? And if they do, then they become inimical to you. Then you will become off course. Okay, so that's how these two are coming together here. So now here he says, so now Arjuna brings up a question. He says, well, I see that, but, he says, that atta. He says, like, but now, okay, I see that, but a person, why then, kena prayukta, impelled by what, does a person find themselves doing papa? Right? He says, kena prayukta, impelled by what? Ayam purushaha, some a person, papam charati, does papa. means goes against their dharma, goes against their duty, does what is not to be done. Papa, you can translate it sin if you want. It's doing what is not to be done. Why does a person, impelled by what then? You know, because this is obvious, so impelled by what does a person do? Papa. Anichan api, even though not wanting to. You know? Even though not wanting to do something that's wrong, even then, hey Varshneya, Varshneya is a name for Krishna, O Krishna, balat eva niyojitaha, as though pushed by force, balat eva, as though by forcefully, as though something is pushing me to do something that's adharmic, to do a papa. What's causing me to do that? Even, see, the thing is, even if I know it's wrong, even if when I know, you know, I shouldn't do that, I should be doing this. I know that. But I do this. What is causing that? So Arjuna is asking that question. Now, in Swamiji's Bhasha, he talks about Duryodhana, because Duryodhana, there's several verses about Duryodhana, not in the Bhasha and here, but in the Mahabharata, where Duryodhana says, in answer to a question like this, he says, basically this, I'm not stupid. I know what is dharma. And I know what is adharma. I've been raised well. I know what is to be done, and I know what is not to be done. But I find that I have no pravritti. I know I have no inclination to do what is to be done. Right? And I have nothing that tells me no to do what is not to be done. No nivritti. Nothing causes me to back away. Then he says, in fact, whatever urge comes up, that I do.
Like a dog.
That's Duryodhana. Everybody know who Duryodhana is in the Bhagavad Gita. The Pandavas are the dharmis who are led by Arjuna, and then the Duryodhana is the Kauravas. Duryodhana are they're all the rakshasas. Right? And so Duryodhana is the head rakshasa. But when he's describing himself here, that is the rakshasa. So we all have this rakshasa inside of us, right? So this is what it is. You know? It's beautifully put. When Arjuna is saying, I don't want to do, you know, what would make me do what I know I shouldn't do, even though I don't want to do. I don't want to do what I shouldn't do, but sometimes I do it. Sometimes I do what I shouldn't do. What causes me to do that? That's Arjuna. Duryodhana says, I know all of that, but I just do whatever's on my mind and I don't care. I don't have any inclination to do what I should do. And I don't have any inclination to not do what I shouldn't do. I simply do what comes to my mind. So this is the two. That's the contrast. It's really, really kind of nice to see it. So here, whether Duryodhana is speaking or Arjuna is speaking, the fact is that something comes in and impels me to do something even though I don't really want to do it. I know that I shouldn't do it. What is that? So that's Arjuna's question, Krishna. So, ready? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kama Esha Krodha Eshaha, Kama Esha Krodha Eshaha, Rajo Guna Samudbhavaha, Rajo Guna Samudbhavaha, Mahashano Mahapapma, Mahashano Mahapapma, Vidyenam Ihavairinam, Vidyenam Ihavairinam. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Kamaha Eshaha Krodaha Eshaha Rajo Guna Samudbhavaha Mahashanaha Mahapapma Vidhi enam iha bhavinam. So Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Lord Bhagavan says, this that is causing you to do this, eshaha kamaha, this is kama, desire. Desire causes it. And that desire, eshaha krodaha, is anger. So kama, krodha, we'll see. Kama, krodha, anger comes out of the kama. So this is kama, this is krodha. Okay? So it's putting these two together, we'll see in a minute. And this kama, and this kama, this desire, and this krodha, this anger, is rajoguna samudbhavaha. It's born out of the rajas, the rajoguna. There's three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva is, in the sattva guna, there's just a wisdom there. There's shanti, right? There's clarity. The buddhi is clear. There's jnanam there. But in rajas, there's activity. So, in fact, in Shankara's Bhasha, he says that the desire itself can excite the rajas, or it's the rajas itself which is the kama. Right? So you can take it either way. Rajas means that force, that energy. Right? And so the kama impels the mind, impels the body, impels the sense organs into action. Without the rajas, the mind is just abiding, right? But when the rajas is active, it can impel the mind. And so they're equating kama as even either being born of rajas or the kama itself causing the rajas. Whichever way, you can take it either way. And he says, this kama, just krodha, is mahashanaha. It is a glutton. Ashana is somebody who's eating. Mahashana, someone who can't stop eating. Right? Kama can't stop. It doesn't stop. It's not like the kama, desire, goes away. Right? As though you can feel the kama. So we'll see that in a minute. So he says, this mahashanaha, this kama, is mahashanaha. It's gluttonous. And it's mahapapma. It's a great sinner. Right? It's a great poppy. It's a great glutton, and it's a great poppy. Poppy means sinner, right? Because he says. So he says, viddi, know this. Viddi enam, know this. Enam is this. Know this to be a virinam, the enemy here. Iha means here. Know that this is the enemy here. Virinam. This is what causes all of the problems. This is the enemy. So that's what he says. So now, a couple of interesting things. Shankara, for whatever reason, has decided now in the Sri Bhagavan Uvacha to he just gives a paragraph on the meaning of Bhagavan, right? So the word Bhaga means wealth. Bhagavan, that van affix, it's Bhagavat actually, and van is the nominative singular. Bhagavat is the one who has wealth. And the bhagas are considered to be the sixfold, right? So Bhagavan is a name for the one who has the sixfold wealth in totality. The first wealth is called Aishwarya. Aishwarya means overlordship. In other words, say a king, I use this example, a king has overlordship to his kingdom. So all of the progeny and all of the people in the kingdom. Bhagavan has overlordship for all that is. So total. Viryam is the second one. Viryam is the creative capacity, strength. But strength used in the sense of creative capacity. The one who has the energy to project the universe. So the strength, the viryam to project the universe. Yashas, the third one is yashas. The one who has all fame. Because everything that is in the universe, all the vibhutis, sometimes we'll talk about it like this. All of the vibhutis in the universe, vibhutis means glories, like for instance the Himalayas are one of the vibhutis. All of the Taj Mahal. All of the Gandhi. All of the exalted people all of the exalted athletes, all of the exalted musicians, anything that is exalted is considered a vibhuti. All of the Lord talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. All of the vibhutis are mine alone. I'm the Ganga, right? I'm the Himalayas. I'm the Ganga. You know, I'm all of the glories are nothing but mine, but myself. And then from another standpoint, the Lord is the one who is praised by all beings, or hated by all beings. What was praised by all beings and hated by some. What I'm thinking of is there's a famous story that sometimes you tell, Swamiji is often told, about Bhagavan's greatest devotee is the Rakshasa, who all of the time, all day in and day out, just thinks about the Lord, all the terrible things he's done. You did this, and then you did this, and now you're doing this. I can't stand the way you do this. It's all he thinks about, day in and day out. So the Lord says, you are my greatest bhakta. You are my greatest bhakta. Because there is no time. There is no time that you're not consumed with me. You carry me in your heart at all times. You're your greatest bhakta. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. But then, just in another, if you think of it in a different way, you know, when you study all of the different cultures around the world, they all are praising. There's all religion all around the world. And all of these religions are praising the Lord. Right? That's incredible. You know, some of these things, when you just kind of objectify them and see the fact of it, that in fact around the whole globe, in every different culture, there are many different ways in religion, ways of praising the Lord, you know, bowing down to the Lord. Yet if you look at Islam, it's so interesting. So we've got some Muslim students, and they have a place that they go up on the sixth floor. So there's several times a day when they do all their prostrations. They're bowing down to the Lord. There's just so many ways of expressing that type of devotion. So the most famous person, the one who has all fame, is Bhagavan, the Yashas, the most exalted of the famous. The one who is Shri has all wealth because the whole creation is mine alone. The one who has Jnanam, all knowledge, because the universe is an expression of manifest knowledge. That's all it is. So remember when if I do the meadow, you know, you have a thought in your mind, that thought is manifest knowledge. If you think of the whole universe, everything that exists within time and space as manifest knowledge of Ishvara, right, then Ishvara is omniscient, all knowledge, because anything that is manifest is known, right? So he's Jnanam. And Bhagavan, the sixth one, is Vairagya. Bhagavan has total Vairagya. Vairagya means dispassion. It means, but to understand the Vairagya, it is Jnanam. Vairagya is wholeness. We translate it as dispassion, but that's so often misunderstood because we think of dispassion as this, I don't like this. Whereas dispassion has nothing to do with it. It has, this is fine, I don't need this, that's all. It's not that I don't like this. It's not that I don't want this or that I want it. It's that its presence is fine, or its absence is fine. That's Vairagya. Its presence is fine, its absence is fine. Fine in what way? In that my wholeness, my well-being, is totally independent of the presence or absence of this thing. So when my wholeness, my well-being, is free, is independent, not dependent upon the existence or non-existence of the entire universe, then I have total Vairagya. And the Jnani, in fact, can have total Vairagya. Right? Because, what does it mean? It means with assimilated knowledge, this is fine as it is. I don't need this to be happy. You know, I don't need for you to be in a particular way to be happy. I don't need for my life to be in a particular way to be happy. I can be, because of that, I can be interested in the life the way it is. I can be interested in you in the way that you are. It's such a gift. A person who has vairagya, they're so pleasant to be around. Right? Because I can be with you without needing you to be different. You can't fake that. You know? But if a person can be with you without wanting you to be different, then even if they help you to change, it's because you want to change or you're working on something. They can help you to change, and that is fine also. But they don't need you to change in order for them to be whole. That is the vairagya. Sometimes the story we tell is the difference between in vairagya, between a child who has a helium balloon, and of course it ends up going. You let go of it somehow by mistake, and it's gone, which is a very sad event, you know, for the child. But for an adult, most often, it isn't a sad event at all. It's interesting. You don't have the balloon anymore, but then you can enjoy the flight of the balloon. So you're free. That's freedom. Right? How can a person, how can a jnani, Ishwar can have that freedom? Because there's nothing I'm not. I'm not any one given thing. I am the whole. There's nothing that I have or don't have. Because I'm not attached, I'm not connected to anything. I am absolutely the whole. So there's vairagya, and there's no need for vairagya. Because there's nothing that I'm not. So I am the whole. Now for the jnani, what is it for the jnani? I am the whole. In what sense? This body, mind, sense organs are part of Ishwara. They're part of the whole. But what is my nature? The conscious being. Does the conscious being, the being that I am, require this whole or this body, mind, sense organs to be in a particular way in order for me to feel all is well with me? That's the vairagya. What do I need to feel all is well with me? If I don't need anything, then I have vairagya. But to have vairagya, where I don't need anything, I must have knowledge. Because if I don't have knowledge, then I'm driven by kama. I'm driven by kama, I'm driven by desire in order to gain the fullness that in reality I am. But unless I know that I'm that fullness, I'm seeking it. Right? If I'm seeking it, then I'm going to be bound by kama krodha. Right? By kama and krodha. So what's the difference between kama and krodha? So anyway, that's the Bhagavan, right? This, the one who has these sixfold, called Aishwarya, Viryam, Yashas. Aishwarya is overlordship. Viryam is the capacity, the strength. It really means strength. Strength to create. Yashas is fame. Shri is wealth. Jnanam is knowledge. And Vairagya is that dispassion. So the Bhagavan, the one who has this sixfold wealth. That's the meaning of the word Bhagavan. Okay. So this Bhagavan says, kama and krodha, these are what drive you, right? These are what cause you to do what you don't want to do. They cause you to commit a dharma. They cause you to go off track. They cause you to cause other people pain. They cause you to accrue papa. And why did they put kama and krodha? Kama means I have a desire, I want something. And that desire, if I say I have no control of it, or if the desire is harmless, I can just go after it, it doesn't matter. But say I have no control of it. Say I have no control over it. Then that the danger that makes the kama an enemy is that it can take me away from my own dharma. Right? And so by going after something, I go after something at the expense of my dharma. That's the problem with it. But then, if that kama, if that desire that I'm going after, if that desire is thwarted, a thwarted kama, a thwarted desire, it turns into krodha. Anger is thwarted kama. Thwarted. Thwarted means it's blocked. Somebody gets, it's an obstructed kama. Thwarted means somebody thwarts it, somebody obstructs it. Okay? So, in fact, let me just see if I can read this to you. Just a couple of lines by Shankar, just so that you can get this bhasha. He says, Kamaha eshaha. This kama is sarvaloka shatruhu. It's the enemy of the entire world. This kama is the enemy of all people. And he says, Yennimitta sarva anartha praptihi. And it's the enemy of all people. He says, Because of it, yennimitta, caused by it, all of the anarthas, anarthas are all of the calamities, all of the negative things in the world are attained, that take place. Sarva anartha prapti, the attainment of all of the anarthas, of all of the negative things that happen, they are caused by this. For all beings. And if you really start thinking about it, what gets people into trouble? I want this so that I can be happy, but this person wants it too. You know? And if I want this, and I need this, then I've divided the world up into what I have to have, you know? What I have to have, and then what you have to have, and what you have to have. See, everything divides up. It's not any longer about what I do have. It's about what I want. Think there's a huge difference here. If you think, right, like right now, here we all are, we're all together right now in this room. We have this right now. It's complete, right? But what if you don't want it? Okay? Say that this room, being right now here in this room, is not in harmony with your kama, with your desire. Okay, so now there has to be, this is no longer okay. See what I mean? So movement has to take place. Now the thing is, does that movement go along with your dharma? So this is how it works. And what about everybody else's kamas? Now, just to make it so far so good, it's not really a problem. But now say, you don't like things the way they are. You want to change them. Say you want to open the window because you're hot. Okay? Just simple, okay? You want to open the window. One person wants to open the window. Too hot. So that person gets up, goes over, opens the window. Okay? But another person says, why are you opening the window? It's too cold in here. Why are you opening the window? It's too cold in here. Well, I'm too hot. All right, well, shut it then. I'll just shut it then. Well, you don't have to be rude about it.
Can be rude if I want to.
I mean, this is just an absurd example. But most kama krodha is absurd. You see what I mean? Like, if everything can be fine, but then you want something to be different, and so you go and make that change to make it be different, but somebody doesn't want you to make the change, and so they obstruct you from making the change. And then when they obstruct you from making the change that you wanted to make because it would make you much more comfortable, somebody has come and obstructed you now, and that irritates you. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what krodha is. It's an obstructed kama.
boundary issue out of that.
Yeah.
That's when quota comes up often, right?
Yeah. But what is it really coming up? What you want, your desire, is being obstructed. And so this is exactly now what he says. So Esha Kamaha, and that Kama, you know, which is, he says, is the Anarta. It causes all of the problems. The Kama causes all of the problems. So he goes on and he says, and this Kama, when it's Pratihattaha Kenachit, when it's obstructed by somebody, that's very common when it's obstructed by somebody, he says, Krodha Twena Parinamate, it converts into Krodha. And this very desire, as soon as it's obstructed by someone or something, it will convert into Krodha. Right? And he says, Attaha Krodha Api Esha Evaha. He says, and therefore, I'm talking about Krodha in this verse too. Because Kama and Krodha, these two go together. Right? These two go together. When you're angry, and what happens when you're angry? The whole other set of emotions come. Anger can bring in envy and jealousy and hatred and rage and disdain and loathing. It all depends on the Kama and what type of an obstruction it is. What about words like loathing? These are terrible words. Can you imagine? I mean, somebody does something to you. They obstruct your happiness in such a way that you hate them. You loathe them. Right? You have hatred and loathing because they've obstructed your happiness. And now, why would we use such a huge word like hatred and loathing? It's because the happiness that they've obstructed, the desire that they've obstructed for you, is a big desire. It's not like the window. I don't think if somebody wanted the window opened and another wanted it closed, you wouldn't look at the person with hatred and loathing. Right? Because it's a little desire and you can let it go. You'll be, that type of krodha is just like, we'll use smaller words for it. Annoyance, irritation, right? That's the type of, those are the words we'll use for the small little desires, desires that have been obstructed. Annoyance, irritation, kind of like a mosquito bite. Now, things that you can easily brush off, you know? But then there's bigger desires where you really, in your heart, you feel that my well-being really depends upon this being in a particular way, or my well-being depends upon my partner being true to me, for instance. What about betrayal? These type of things, you know? My well-being depends on that. So there's desires where I've invested my happiness in things that are very, very important to me. And then when something, it's still a comma. You see that? I still have a desire that, say, even in an intimate relationship where we get into the most trouble, mm-hmm. right? With an intimate relationship where there's a commitment there, you know, then there's certain possessiveness. And so you desire that your partner behave according to certain standards. And some of those standards are dharma also. Like, for instance, commitment and loyalty. You don't want your partner divorcing you or running off with somebody else. You know? These are huge, huge hurts. But those hurts so your desire, your huge desire and your expectation has really been terribly betrayed, terribly thwarted. But you see? When that happens, I get a big anger. I use big words then, like hatred, betrayal, loathing, you know, the worst words that you can imagine, disdain, disgust. These are all just forms of krodha. They're all things that are brought about because my kama has been obstructed. I wanted the life. Really, you can understand, if you really start thinking of it, you can understand what it means to have vairagya. I have wanted the life to be in a certain way. Now that's natural, right? I've wanted life to be in a certain way. But there's a key word there. I want. Right? I want my life to be in a certain way. What if it's not? What if the life is not unfolding in the way that you had wanted? We don't usually think about this in terms of desire, because when we think about desire, we think about, you know, I want a new car, or I want a new job, or I want this, or I want that. We think just in terms of objects, but it's much deeper than that. I want my life to be a certain way. You know, I want my destiny to be a certain way. What if it's not going the way that I want? Then what? Krodha. But what are the different kinds of words we use for krodha? I'm depressed, I'm dejected, I'm unhappy, I'm disappointed. These are all just terms. It's krodha. You see that? And so what does it mean really when you talk about being a jnani, to really have self-knowledge, to have vairagya? What does that really mean? It means the mind itself, the fullness and the wholeness that the mind enjoys is enough. It's enough for my mind to not care. Well, let me put it this way. The fullness that I'm enjoying is enough that I can appreciate my life and my world the way it is. This is somehow where we get a little confused. Vairagya is something that kind of blossoms and unfolds as I gain nishta in my knowledge. Right? Because in order to really have vairagya, I have to be whole. I have to be able to say, all is well with me. If I can't say all is well with me, then that vairagya is in a sense obstructed, because now I need to do something to make all is well with me. Right? What if I say all is not well with me? Okay, all's not well with me. Now what? Yeah. What if I say all is not well with me, but I'm fine with that? Then all is well with me. If I can say, and if you're not kidding, if you really mean it, all is not well with me, my body is sick or my mind's dull, but all is well with me. All is well with me in spite of all not being well with me. That's fine. That's vairagya, if you're not lying. But the only way you can say that and not be lying is that all truly is well with you. And that's not hypothetical. It means that your being, the being that you are, the wholeness that you are, the mind abides in that, and that is its home. The whole being that you are is the home for the wholeness that you are is the home for the mind. Right? And so the mind enjoying that wholeness then is experiencing the life as it is. So that's the vairagya. If that and your knowledge, you mature into that vairagya. In fact, jnanam and vairagya are in a sense the same, right? Because I have to recognize, what does it mean really to have knowledge? Is I recognize myself, who I am, when we did in the meditation, just your being, who you are. That being, who you are, is whole and complete. And that whole and complete being that you are is not obstructed by the universe. Right? It's that simple. The universe doesn't obstruct it. How can the universe obstruct it? Only when the mind says, I want this so that I can be happy. And why would that obstruct it? Even that need not obstruct it. Right? If the mind says, look at the difference. My mind is relaxed. I am just as I am. My mind's not causing any problem for me, but I'm just living my life. My mind says, I want a glass of water. So I get up and get a glass of water. There's no obstruction. There's no problem that's happening. There's no lack of vairagya there. My ananda, my mind has not closed over and it's not causing me pain. What if I'm sitting normally and then something comes up and I have a desire that says, I have to have that in order to be happy. Right? Once that, as soon as that happens, right, then my mind is in a totally different condition. Right? It's tense, and the whole world has, I've become a jiva, I would say. As soon as that happens, I become a jiva in the world. I, an individual in the world. I now need this in order to be happy. And so then everything breaks up into likes and dislikes, and things become irritants to me, and people become obstructions to me, and the whole samsara takes place. Right? Samsara has now blossomed, and I'm in the middle of it. Okay? Okay, but when I pull my mind back, right, when I pull my mind back, and at that moment when I don't need things to be different, then what? Then I'm whole and complete as I am. And so what about when the mind is not able, no longer is able to be pulled out like that? That's jnana-nishtha. That's vairagya. It's just when the mind doesn't have that tendency to be pulled out anymore because it's too exhausting. It's not worth it. Your mind would much rather just stay home and enjoy the life that is here. That doesn't mean not engaging in it, but it means where you're not at stake. You're not, your happiness, you haven't given your happiness over to the world and then have to go after it. That's the vairagya. Okay, so here he says, the kama and krodha, right? The kama and krodha themselves, if they've taken over, the kama, just look at the kama, it's mahashanaha. It's something that, as kama means, I need this to be happy. That's the what it is. I want this in order to be happy. That kama cannot never be satiated. You'll get something, you know, you've eaten it, but then a short time later, you're hungry again. And a short time later, you're hungry again. The kama is not something that can ever be exhausted. It's not something that can be exhausted. And so it's insatiable. And then when that kama is not fulfilled, right, it can become the maha papi. It can be the cause of great sin, right? Because you'll go against your own dharma in order to get your way. That's how strong it is. See, say if you have a value system, this is Arjuna's problem. If you have a value system of what you know, what your responsibilities are, and what you should be, and the type of person you want to be, the type of person you have value for, if you have a kama, you will go against your value system, which is an extraordinary thing. It's an extraordinary power. It's a human condition. But when you think about it, you can see how strong kama is, that it'll take you away from what you know is the right thing to do. That's how strong it is. You can just knock it right off. Yeah. And so that's why Krishna says that kama itself, raga dvesha, those are your enemies. They're natural. They're human. They're absolutely natural. Everything in the creation can bring them about. But if they are stronger than you, right? If you don't hold them, if you don't have them in your hand, they're your greatest enemy. And they are what are responsible for bringing about destruction to you as a person. Let's take a minute. Purnamidam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamidachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om